and welcome to episode 233 of Checkpoint Chat. My name is Alessandro Barbosa. I'm joined. Why are you smoking?
One day I'm going to lie to you.
by Matthew Figuera.
Your willingness to trust me is amazing. You're like, what episode is this? Like 233. You're like, cool. Hello. Welcome to episode 233. One day I'm just going to be like, yeah, it's 259.
You can only do that joke once, though.
And everyone will think you're silly because it couldn't be 259.
I mean, please, let's all be honest. Everyone thinks I'm silly already. This is not news.
But then you'll never be able to go out in public again. You'll always be known as the guy who,
wow.
who got the podcast
wow.
number wrong.
Never. I wouldn't be able to leave my home. My cats wouldn't look at me. They'd be like... You've brought shame to this family.
You log on to Twitter, you see your cats have tweeted looking for a new home. Like, whoa. It hurts.
It's escalated so fast. All I did was get a number wrong. Why am I being treated like this?
Like, hey, Toby and Abigail, you left your little cat knife in my back. Please take it out.
Two little incisor marks in my back.
What's hanging on my back? Oh, it's just my cats. What they paws. Good grief.
I see you've got a new view this week.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see your whole kitchen. It's delightful.
So my sister's staying with us. She's not here at the moment. That would be hilarious. I'll just point the camera at her. She'd love that.
just be like, hello.
She'd hate that. So I've moved my setup, but now I'm in the middle of the room. So if you do see a wild landscape behind me at any stage, please bear with me because I actually did spend some time. So we went out for supper last night, got home. It's like 11, half past 11. We all need to shower. It's late. We're tired. And I did try to figure out how to blur the background behind me. Like you can do on Teams or Zoom.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like a built-in. OBS does not have a built-in thing at all. Well, not that I could find. So you have to download like a mod or whatever. And when you put it on, it's literally a thing of, it's so versatile and... There's so many options that you have to like literally almost like dictate how you want to get the blur done. I'm like, I don't have time to figure this out now. I could like have my face and just blur everything else, but it's not like an automatic, it cuts out everything around me. It'll literally be like a frame.
Like, like a strong blur that keeps me in frame, whatever you.
I'm sure they exist. I just couldn't find it last night. So I was like, it's fine. It's just, yeah. So enjoy the kitchen. Enjoy the flowers. It's definitely more scenic this week. Enjoy the kettle, the knives.
I was going to say, Lenska doesn't need to come into the kitchen because she can just remotely boil the kettle.
Mm. Alexa, boil the kettle. Don't say it too loud. She might hear. And then she will boil. So we did. We got a smart kettle. You can tell Alexa to boil the kettle. Best. You're shaking your head like you wouldn't do that. In the year 2030, you're going to be like, fridge, open the door, and your fridge will open the door.
Wow. That would be the height of laziness. My God. Like, fridge, so that as I get there, I get blasted with the cold air from the fridge.
Fridge, open the door.
No.
Stove.
I mean,
make me dinner.
A remotely boiling kettle, I guess, makes sense. But you still have to get up to make the tea. So,
we're not living in 2040 here. Okay.
It doesn't pour you the tea and bring it to you.
Don't act like you wouldn't be in bed freezing in the winter and go, oh, it's so cold. I need to go make myself a hot water bottle. But then you have to talk yourself into going to the kitchen to boil the kettle. Now you can just go.
And then running back to bed to get
like,
warm.
Alexa, boil the kettle. And by the time you get there, it's hot. As long as you put water in, that's got to remember that.
The only problem with that is like, but then you get to the kettle and it's boiled, but also you realize Alexa's ordered you like 10,000 things off Amazon by accident.
We ordered you 300 boiled kettles. Like, what? No.
Yeah. No, that's not what I asked for at all. Not even close.
Come on, Alexa. Work with me. No, but we actually only got it last night, so I haven't even set it up. But that's the plan.
Mm. Oh, so you've been very careful with your pronunciation, even though it can't actually...
No, because I think Lenska did set it up last night, but I don't know to what extent it is set up. I didn't touch it. So it could.
You see, you have to be careful of the robots now. You don't know how to use them because you don't know how they react.
Yeah, Alexa's reporting to Amazon now saying the user doesn't know how to use smart kettle. Humanity's dumb. They're doomed. My goodness.
What other smart things do you have? Because I know you've got a lot of those little Echo Dot things.
I know, we've just got the one. You can actually see it in frame there. Just the... It's not the Echo Dot, it's the...
The Nest?
What the hell is it called? It's just like the Alexa with the screen.
The speaker thing.
What the hell is it called?
Does it have a screen? Oh, that's cool.
It's got a little touchscreen. So we actually had a big one that we brought back from our last trip here a few years ago. But it was way too big to bring. So we swapped with my in-laws. We bought the little one. But it does exactly the same thing. It's just a smaller screen. It's got Bluetooth, speaker, everything. It's the business. Like Alexa.
Living your best life.
I want to say it too loud though, because she can hear us. You've said like, Alexa, play some music. Play some music, man. We actually living. Alexa, play some music and boil the kettle. That's a...
Oh my goodness. That's too much to ask at once. Too much to ask.
Wouldn't get it.
Yeah. Alexa, boil the kettle and start the timer for 10 minutes and play Hollow Knight soundtrack.
Nice. Alexa, tell me I look good today. Like, and she will.
Wow. Sure. I mean, you could ask that of Lenska. You don't have to ask Alexa that.
I don't get that response, though.
Oh, no.
No, I'm lying. Cool. So you guys are heading into a good old spring?
Yeah, it's getting warmer and warmer and drier and drier. And it's... we had so much rain during winter, you'd know, because you were still here at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Now there's we are just parched now. It is the desert here.
It's always the first few weeks of September.
Oof, it's so dry and it's so dusty. And
it actually hasn't rained here.
And
it hasn't rained here for a few weeks either. It's really dry and hot here.
In the UK? Really?
Mm. Yep.
Yeah, but Europe is going through like heat, like we were talking before recording.
It is
the
hot.
Rugby World Cup has started and France is like boiling hot. Like,
it is very hot.
Crazy.
It's weird though because like the air outside's not bad, but there's just no wind. There's no draft. So in our little place, it just the air just sits. Like if I look at our thermostat, it's what? It's 8 in the morning. It's 28 in our apartment. It's real hot.
Yeah. No wonder your poor little PC is screaming when you're playing Starfield. It's just like, release me from this pain, please. Help.
Please, look, that definitely has an effect. But I mean, I'm glad that I've tested and I will sort it out. I'll get fans and I'll future-proof that. So that my little PC doesn't die.
I don't think it's the biggest... It's not the hardest thing to solve. I think it's just you're discovering the limitations of RTX. Like you have to be very, very careful in its balance, you know.
Oh my gosh. Also it's I think of my old PC. It's like there's so much room for activity. You know how easy it would be to install a fan. Now I'm like, I'm new to PC building. I built an RTX machine. I've put it together, it works. I never want to open it again for a while. Look at the thermals. I'm like, God, this is quite warm. Where can I put the fans? Right at the bottom of the case. I'm going to have to remove my big old CPU cooler block. It's great. I'm going to have to route cables past to the bottom of the case. Yeah. That actually won't be that complicated, now that I think about it. It's just the act of doing it.
It won't be too bad. I just hope it works. You know what I mean? I hope you don't go through all that effort then it doesn't work. But
I think it'll work. Yeah. I honestly think there's, for those of you who don't know, like I've got a teeny tiny little RTX case. I've got my CPU cooler pulling in air from the side, and then I've got fans pulling air out from the top. So the case is small, but there's a little bit at the bottom where my graphics card is, where it's not really getting a huge amount of airflow outside of what it's pulling itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that solves the problem. I don't see it not fixing the problem. Also, it might just be a thing of it's a heat wave this week. It's just very hot. Like my thermals look high because it is hot. Like there's no way around it.
We'll see. I mean that too. But I also think it's just it's a balancing act. You got to maybe like sacrifice some noise for more fan airflow or whatever. You know? So
that's fine.
It's just, it is what it is. Yeah. You'll play around with it. And then by the time you figure it out, it'll be like fucking -5 degrees there. And
like, why did I buy these fans? I could just put my PC out.
Could actually get a toastier in there. Why isn't it my little space heater to keep my hands warm?
It's so cold in here. Put the PC on, it'll just heat us right up. It's all good.
Exactly. Lenska's like, please can you bring the PC to bed? My feet are cold.
Why is it so loud? Like, those fans got to spin. I got to keep that thing.
it's not hot enough. It's fine. I'll just launch Starfield real quick.
My thing is like, we will get to Starfield actually, but how resource intensive is Starfield actually as a game? Like, I imagine on
quite
the
quite apparently.
Oh, is it quite? Okay. I was going to say, it's not like a Cyberpunk where I'll play the DLC later this year. I mean, this month, and it'll be all the rays are being traced and all the night cities are being illuminated. And
citied.
Yeah, all the night cities are being citied. Starfield.
I see what you mean. You like Starfield. I mean, Starfield looks good. But yeah, the sort of like resources it's demanding seem disproportionate to what it looks like.
Is, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, even on like 4080s and 4090s, that thing is, I wouldn't say struggling. I'm not going to say like this is a disaster of a port and it's running poorly, because that's not the case.
Yeah.
But it is way more resource intensive than I think you assume by looking at it. I mean, it's also because it doesn't have DLSS, although you should mod that. We should both be using that because there's a mod for that, and that greatly helps performance. Firstly, FSR is not as performant, and also just looks like ass, I think. But yeah, I mean, even on my machine, it was like just hovering above 60 frames per second at 1440p. And this is a 3080 Ti. Like,
it's time to upgrade.
It's time to upgrade. It's time. Listen, I fully back that man after that question. That is one of the most bullshit questions I've ever seen. So I can't believe they actually fielded that to him.
Quick contact. Was it Bloomberg?
Bloomberg were interviewing
on a live interview. They're like, oh, we've got some fan questions. One, I'm paraphrasing completely, but like, one fan says, why is your game not optimized for PC?
Yeah.
And Todd Howard's
complete
like,
fucking nonsense.
He's like, it's very optimized for PC. Maybe you just need to upgrade your PC.
Fucking fair enough. Boom. Like, yeah. Go get a better PC.
Bless that, man.
Like, it is. It runs perfectly fine on PC. It is not like a, what are some bad ports from this year? Star Wars,
all of them.
Jedi Survivor.
All of the PC ports.
Jedi Survivor was fucking terrible on PC. And that is, you know, it like did not matter what hardware you threw at it. It would not be good. Starfield scales as it should, on PC. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just, it's very resource intensive.
Yeah.
And that's probably because it's storing the location of your 10 billion potatoes in your cargo hold, you know.
Amazing. I can't. Well, we can talk about that shortly.
Into the Starfield of video games.
Yes. Wow.
It's Checkpoint Chat to talk about
that. What a natural segue. Amazing.
I know. It's a gift, you know. I wish I could teach people how to be as good, but, you know.
You'll always be remembered as the man who forgot the podcast episode number, but also the guy with the best segues. So that it cancels out. It's good.
Tough life to lead, but someone has to do it, you know.
Charles Starfield.
Starfield. So we spoke about this actually quite a bit last week, even though I'd barely played it.
I've probably played as much this week as you played last week. Like, I've done the character creator and maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours max of Starfield.
Okay.
It's been a week, so
I'm probably like, I'd say about 8 hours or so. Like, I haven't had as much time as I would have liked throughout this whole week, but I played a bit more. The beginning hours of this game are incredibly slow, I think. There's a lot of you are fast traveling between all of these different places because you're following, you're kind of like getting the crux of like the story missions and getting the setup for what you're going to be doing for the rest of the, you know, how many ever hours in this galaxy. And a lot of that is just like, fast travel to this planet, talk to this guy. Okay, he's told you need to go to this planet, fast travel to that planet, go to this guy. Oh, now you need to go somewhere else. Okay, fast travel there, go into a cave, shoot some dudes, objective complete, fast travel back to this place to complete the quest. And it's like, it was very good at exposing what I think is, it's weird to call it a shortcoming because it's not necessarily something that maybe they designed for, but like the biggest thing that irritates me about this game is it's like interplanetary travel.
Yeah.
In that it's like you can go to your ship and then you can set a course and then watch the little cutscene of you like launching from a space pad into space, and then you're in space, and then you open up the menu again and then chart your course to a planet and see you traveling through hyperspace, and then you're in orbit again at the new planet, and then you've got to open up a menu a third time to select a landing position, and then you watch a third cutscene to, so you can do all that. That gets old like incredibly quickly. So right now all I'm doing is I'm on foot on a planet, I open up my map, I go all the way to the place I want to travel to, I hit travel, and then I'm there.
Takes you there,
like
okay.
That's it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an like kind of shit because you miss like this whole component of Starfield, like of like when you land in orbit on a planet, sometimes the space police, I don't know what faction they're called, they will like scan your ship for contraband. So you miss that little like experience, like if you have contraband of being scanned. And I don't know what happens if you do have contraband on your ship and then you do make that like fast travel from foot, like will they still make that check or, you know, stuff like that. You miss the opportunity to like engage in dogfights in space randomly if you come across like enemies while you're in orbit somewhere. And it all stems from like this trying to alleviate all of these like steps of opening a menu, setting a course, waiting, opening a menu, setting a course, waiting. It just feels very jarring, that whole process. And I wish that was a bit more smoothed out. Like, obviously, I wish it was more like something like a No Man's Sky where you just like jettison from space, from a spaceport and aim your ship upwards and you fly out into the atmosphere and then you're in space. But I understand why that might be a limitation given, you know, the density of the planets that you're on, the makeup of how they work. You know, like No Man's Sky is a procedurally generated thing. Its planets are all very samey and they're all very empty. So maybe it can afford to do that, whereas Starfield can't. I get that.
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, the travel between planets makes this game that is definitely much, much larger than anything Bethesda has made. It makes it feels incredibly small because it feels like I'm just fast traveling between cities. You know, I'm not actually traveling between the cities like I would in a Fallout or a Skyrim where I actually have to like walk between these two places. And it makes the whole thing feel a bit routine and rote because it's just like I'm fast traveling between objectives, completing them, and that's it. I don't feel like I'm actually exploring. So now that I've done a few story missions and I've got to a point, I did a story mission, which I saw a lot of people advising you like kind of do before you start like really branching yourself out. And I now understand why they've said that. I'm going to start like, I've already picked up like a few side missions that I want to kind of explore, and I'm hoping that's going to alleviate that. Cause this first few hours has felt very, it's kind of like not engaged me a lot in the game. So I don't know. What's your experience just the first few hours?
Before I talk about my thoughts, I'm blown away by the fact that this game apparently runs on an Xbox One, which is like, I understand.
No, it doesn't.
Isn't it on Xbox One? I swear it is. Where did I read
you
that?
You can stream it via xCloud on it. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's not like
that makes a lot
Xbox
more
One.
Sense because I was like, okay. I get
the
it. It's
Xbox
an
One
aged,
would melt
yeah,
underneath
I was like,
itself.
So that's my bad. I completely misunderstood that. So I was like, holy hell, that's like a Skyrim machine. They've clearly done some wizardry to make it work. So I've only played the opening hours, and it is a real slow burn. I've done some of the space travel, and it's actually a lot to take in. Like I think they do a decent job of onboarding you, but it doesn't take away from the fact that like it is, oh, I need to open up this menu and then I need to click on this thing and go there, whatever. I will say though, one of my immediate reactions is that the gunplay actually feels good. Which is something I can't say I expected to see from a Bethesda title, but I think that is a little relationship with all it and the Doom team coming to fruition, because the weapons do. I mean, I haven't played with like a lot of weapons, but the ones I've had, I've actually been surprised and gone like, oh, yeah, like, that actually feels really good. So yeah, I think initially though, it is a slow start. Like, I need to really sink my teeth into the game. I haven't had any moments because, like, story moments or anything like that, because I haven't just gotten far enough into the game. Like, I think where I left off, I've literally just arrived in New Atlantis, which means I've probably just finished the tutorial. And I'm sure there's still more tutorial stuff to do, because there's a lot of systems in this game and there's a lot of places to explore, a lot of quests to do. It's been interesting though, because like I've said to you last week, the last Bethesda game I played from this team, or whatever, it's Fallout 3. It's like a lifetime ago. But
yeah, ages ago.
It still feels the same. Like, it's the same, I don't know, like, character models, as detailed as are. It still has that weird Bethesda DNA on it, where Umar, a good friend Umar, shared a screenshot yesterday. It's like, no wonder they call it Starfield. And it's just three NPCs just, like, looking at him. And I'm like, it looks like Fallout 3 or Oblivion. Mm-hmm. Like, it's that same sort of visual style, if that makes sense. I mean, like... space setting aside, the actual engine has like a very samey look, if that makes sense. And it's just funny that I'm no longer in Tamriel, whatever. It's like, no, I'm in a space game now. I'm not in this nuclear wasteland. It's space land, but it still has a similar feel to it, if that makes sense. Not that that's a bad thing. I'm not at all criticizing it.
They're still staring you deep into the soul. Yes. Like, every time someone talks to you.
There's something
it
about
does look
that.
A lot better, but I know what you mean. They've got that look.
I'm keen to sink my teeth into it more, because like there is a lot in this game. I mean, and if you want to, you know, live out your fantasy of, I don't know, doing whatever it is in space, like, the character creation is so interesting, because even that, there are so many backgrounds and like starting classes. I mean, you can always, you know, build out your character however you want. But it's funny how, if you want to lean into the role playing, how many different personas and perks and that they give you to do that. Because like, I read through all the things and there's everything from like, I don't know, like a soldier to a homesteader to whatever. And then I saw Scoundrel. I'm like,
Chef.
A chef, and I was like, Scoundrel, like, you can be a proper Han Solo, because that was just my first thought. I'm sure I'm not the only one. I'm sure there are tons of people doing that, but it's just cool to think like, oh, I can do that. It's like, I can 100%, because this is a Bethesda game, I can 100% be this character that kind of blurs the line between good and bad. Like, I'm stealing stuff or ferrying stuff. I might kill some good people along the way, I don't know, but I'm keen to see what the repercussions are, you know, as I play the game, because, you know,
I think a lot of that is gonna manifest in the sort of like side quests, because from what I've played in the main quests, there's very little wiggle room to kind of like express yourself in the sort of role playing you want to. Like, there are there's been certain conversations where I'm like, I'm playing as sort of like a space pirate bounty hunter. So I'm kind of trying to embody the role of not really caring about people and more caring about the job and the reward.
Yeah.
And there's been, you know, dialogue options in the main quest, at least, that kind of lean in that direction. And when I select them, you just get like a quirky response from the character, and then you're presented with the same options back. So it's like, it very much wants to funnel you down a specific sort of route.
Okay.
You can't be very flippant about like constellations, objectives, and finding all of these different artifacts. You kind of are locked into that irrespective of what your affinity is or your caring of that. But I guess at the end of the day, you can just ignore them completely and just go and do side quests. That's what a lot of people do in Bethesda games. They're just like, the main quest isn't even consequential to their enjoyment of the game. So, I don't know. I had this also this weird moment where... So there's a lot of big planets in Starfield, meaning like planets with... big cities on them where there's like, so New Atlantis is the first one. I think you get to, you get to another one later on. I can't remember the town's name, but it's like in the New Frontier and it's almost like a Western, like space Western-y vibe to it. It's kind of weird. And then I've heard of Neon, which is another, it's Tatooine. It's definitely Tatooine. Oh my God. I'm going to go see Anakin.
And the sand people.
There's another... Yeah, the sand people, the Tusken Raiders. I'm going to go do pod racing. Can't wait. Then there's also this city called Neon, which is like almost like a cyberpunk-y city. These are like big hubs that you go to with a lot to do where you meet a lot of people. But, you know, there's like 1,000 planets for you to explore in the solar system. And a lot of them are barren. I know Bethesda made a very big point of like, hey, not every one of these is going to have a lot of stuff to do because this is space. Not every planet has things to do.
Yeah.
But at one point during the one of these opening missions, I was in our solar system. So I was on Earth and then was I on Earth? Yeah, I was on Earth. And the companion I had at the time, Sarah from Constellation, made a remark about like taking a detour to the moon. And I was like, cool, that sounds like fun. So I landed on the moon and I started just like jumping around in low gravity and that was kind of neat and whatever. And I saw some things in the distance and I'm like, cool, I'm going to go there. Going, walking, because there's no land vehicles in this game at all. You have to just walk.
No.
So it takes a while to get there and I realized there's like this refinery station there and there's a few people there and they seem pretty chilled with me just rolling up to them and being like, hello. And then they're like, oh, we've lost contact with someone in a cave. Some local fauna attacked us there and she never got out. Can you please go investigate? I'm like, okay. So it puts like a waypoint on the map and it is far away. Like I am hopping in low gravity for a good few minutes to fucking reach this point.
I know.
And I'm just going. I get in the cave and I'm like, cool, it's going to be a firefight. They said there were animals here, which is kind of weird. This is on the moon. I walk in the cave. I find the stranded lady. I give her a med pack because she's injured. She's like, cool, thank you. I'll meet you back at the base. And it's like, go back to the base. And I'm like, are you fucking joking?
Yeah.
Like, it's like I walked all that way just to be told to go back. And I just fast traveled there. I was like, I'm not going to walk all the way back. Yeah. And I get back there and they're like, thank you. Here's a reward. And I'm like, okay. So these barren planets, they're going to have missions, but this is the type of mission it's going to be. It's going to be like, please go somewhere, interact with something, come back, get a reward type of thing.
Yeah.
And I just immediately left the planet. I was like, I don't even fucking care what else is going on. Yeah, I stole some shit from the people. Sarah was not impressed. She was like, are you trying to get us locked in jail? And I'm like, oh, okay, so you don't actually enjoy... It's weird. Constellation... Have you spoken to the people in Constellation yet?
A couple people, I think.
So they... Sarah is like very adamant, like, we don't really care about your background because there's some people in Constellation that are like previous criminals and whatever. We're just in the pursuit of discovery. We don't really care what you do to get there. But then she's so judgmental about everything I do. Like... I was just like, okay, well, this is just hypocrisy. So, but yeah, if a lot of those barren planets are going to be like that, I'm going to be a bit bleak because that means you are somewhat relegated to the more curated ones where the more interesting things are happening. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. There's been some cool stuff though. I've had some cool, like you mentioned, the gunplay is, I think... I don't think it's like the best gunplay in the world.
Oh, no, no.
I don't want to get that twisted. It's definitely the best Bethesda has been by a mile, though.
Yeah.
Like, I wish Fallout felt this good when shooting. And I think you're right. I definitely think they went down the hall and knocked on some doors at id Software and were like, please help.
Please help.
Yeah, because and especially when you get your booster ability, so you can use your jetpack, like jetpacking around... it feels real good. Like to just like, oh, someone's shooting me, I'm going to jetpack into the air and just obliterate them. Like it's good. I'm picking up so many bloody weapons and encumbrance is becoming an issue. I think that limit is way too low, but I do like the way they've changed how it kind of works. So, you know, in Fallout, when you were over encumbered, you couldn't run.
Oh, yeah.
So in this one, you can still run. I'm not talking about sprinting. I'm just talking about when just you moving, press forward on your thumbstick, like running. If you're over encumbered, your O2 level will drop as you do that steadily, you know, which only usually drops when you sprint. So at least you can still move at somewhat non-glacial pace, because in Fallout you're just fucked and you can't you can't even fast travel when you're over encumbered in Fallout. So it's somewhat better here, but I do think it's becoming an issue so early in the game that I'm like, okay, well, I need to either like waste points to increase that limit, or I need to just pick up less shit along the way.
It's a tricky balance, because also, like the little I've played, if I have a gunfight and there's six people that I've killed, you automatically just want to like loot everything, because why wouldn't you? But now it becomes a thing of like, oh, okay, let me just look at this person. Oh, I'm going to pick this. Let me look at this person. Then it slows down the whole, you don't have to sit and nitpick through things you're looting. I mean, I laughed because I wasn't over encumbered, but I looked at my weight. I was like, man, that's weird. I'm still eating the game. Why do I have what am I carrying so much stuff?
You're brushing up against the limit already. Yeah.
And then I open up my inventory. I'm like, oh, I'm carrying like 10 of this one weapon. Drop it. And I laugh because it's just like a pal.
They just drop in front of you. It is like, kind of funny.
I guess it's quite realistic. I could never carry all of that, you know?
But
yeah, it is.
Yeah, you start learning the names of the guns and you can quickly identify like, okay, I'm not going to pick up this gun because I already have one. Or sometimes it'll be like modified of this gun and you'll be like, oh, okay, I'll pick that one up and drop the one I have. Yeah. So it's cool. I've also come across like spacesuit and weapon workbenches, and they remind me a lot of Fallout in that you can mark resources that will then mark them out in the world for you to like kind of bring back and construct into different attachments, different like upgrades. You sometimes also need certain perks to build certain upgrades, like high proficiencies in a certain perk. The weapon one seems quite robust. Like you can add a variety of scopes, magazines, different bullet types, like all sorts. Okay. It's like hectic. There's a lot going on there. So
nice.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I know there's also base building a la like Fallout 4, which I haven't really engaged with that much. But that allows you to do stuff like set up refineries on certain planets that have certain resources, so you get a steady supply of them so that you can upgrade things or build things for your ship. So there's like there is a very big like feedback loop of like you set the stuff up, you get stuff, you upgrade, you keep going, you know what I mean? Which sits like almost tangential to the role-playing aspect. So there's a lot of systems, and I think the game does the best it can in its opening hours to introduce those while not being like, okay, buckle in for 10 hours of just tutorials, you know what I mean? But I do think it's still, I'm enjoying my time slightly more now than I was in the first few hours I was playing this game. I was really like struggling to maintain interest, but I'm going to stick with it. I don't know. I don't know if I will finish like the main story, put it that way. I'm more I'm more interested in investigating the other stuff.
Yeah, now. You play until you get over it. I mean,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, I've played all Bethesda games like this. I never finished Fallout 4. I just played a lot of it and then got to a point where I was like, I think I'm done. I finished Fallout 3. I really enjoyed Fallout 3, but I think Fallout 3, if I have to think about like a Bethesda game with their main story that was actually captivating, that would be Fallout 3. And Skyrim I finished, but that was purely because I needed to understand why people liked it, and then I finished it and I still didn't understand why people
liked it.
Like,
what is going on here?
Hilarious. Yeah, very confusing. Got to the end of that game and the ending is literally a bunch of dragons on a mountain crying, and I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
And then look you in the eye and say, oh yeah, it's Dragonborn, and then it rolls credits.
They were literally crying because I killed the bad dragon. And they were like, even though he was bad, it's sad to lose a brother. I was like, I'm done with this game. I'm so done with this game.
Just get that tattooed. Even though whatever you said was great. Yeah, I'm keen to play more. I think I need to just sort out my PC. I'm going to sink more hours into
it. So it doesn't launch itself into the Starfield while playing.
Nice.
Very different to Starfield. Incredibly different. But many more menus.
So just as many, if not more menus than Starfield.
Definitely more. Definitely more.
Yeah, let me just get this footage playing. So I'm playing the mobile Final Fantasy 7 Ever Crisis. Why is it not playing? There you go. So if you
can,
do
I
not
just say that name sounds so aggressive. Ever Crisis.
So if you don't know, Ever Crisis is a mobile version of the beloved Final Fantasy 7 franchise, but not just the story with Cloud and Co. Not even just the story with Zack. It's like there's a download screen. It's a compilation of stories in that, well, just under that umbrella of Final Fantasy. So it also covers like stuff before Zack. I mean, there's young Sephiroth stories here. But now, if you're watching the video feed, I want you to just pay attention to. So I've just launched the game on my phone. Okay, I just hit record. Look at how long it takes me to get to any gameplay. Because it's a mobile game, it's free to play. There are aggressive microtransactions. And like, games get this right. Like, I'll take my hats off to Marvel Snap, for example. Like, you can play and enjoy that game without spending a single cent. You'll get cards, you unlock. Mm-hmm. The loop of doing daily quests and getting currency, I think it's a fair trade-off. Like, you don't have to invest money, you can if you want to. This game though, like, I've only played maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. It is aggressive. Like, there's, you want to talk about Starfield having complicated menus and systems, like, I still haven't quite figured out what all these millions of currencies do, you know, how things actually work, because you'd think like, it's Final Fantasy, like, how do they monetize this single player game? And it turns out that you're not pulling like characters or whatever, you're pulling weapons and you're upgrading weapons, and I've yet to see how that manifests. Like, I haven't, like, any mobile game of this nature, I'm sure I'm going to hit a point where there's a wall where it's like, oh, your party's power is not strong enough, like, hey, you're gonna have to grind some more, or, you know, just spend some money. It's been a bit of a weird experience, because I've been very excited for this. I mean, Final Fantasy VII, I've played it way too many times, the original. I've played the remake twice, and Final Fantasy Ever Crisis is meant to be this mobile version, which it's kind of this interesting blend of classic Final Fantasy, but with the new Final Fantasy, if that makes sense. Like, the opening scene looks like the modern day Final Fantasy VII remake. And the battle system itself as well has been made, it's a completely different battle system. So what happens is, when you're in a fight, I'm still on the menu. I've yet to even play the game. I'm still out here tapping away, collecting my resources, doing whatever. So the way battles work, you enter a battle, and just like Final Fantasy VII, there's like an active time gauge at the bottom that fills up. But what happens is your character's auto-attack regardless, but that ATB at the bottom fills up a number of bars, and then your spells or abilities cost X number of bars to execute. So it's as clever, like, it's interesting how this game has had so many different variations of its battle system, like between the original Final Fantasy, which was turn-based, and Crisis Core, which was more action-based, and then Final Fantasy VII Remake, which is like a very good balance of both. It's like very much action-based, but there's still, you can pause the game to cast spells. This is another variation of that, and it's pretty cool. It's just been frustrating because I feel that this game, like, my initial impression is that there's just way too many monetization things. There's way too many resources, and I get it. It's free to play, but I almost feel like, well, why can't I just outright buy the game? I'm happy to play through. Like, I want to see how they lay out the story. Like, so the way it works at the moment, I'm only playing through Final Fantasy VII, but I know there's going to come a point where they'll probably take me back to Crisis Core or to this other new story which I've never seen, with Sephiroth as like a young recruit, which I'd love to see. Like, what is the story there? But it's just all wrapped up in this free-to-play model, and it's just frustrating. Like, I would have outright bought this game happily to have it on my phone. But yeah, all that said, it looks great. Like, it's kind of wild that if I could go back in time and tell little me that one day I'll play Final Fantasy VII on my phone, let alone have a full-on remake, it's just incredible that this exists. It's just a pity that it's also held back by weird design choices. Like, I think you shared a tweet which made me laugh, because it's like, what if we take one of the most beloved games of all time and just, like, I don't know how it was phrased, but like, just drown it, or see how we could ruin it with like a million microtransactions. And it's that. Essentially, it really is that, because it's just such a weird thing. And then even, like, again, I still need to play more. I'm going to keep playing more, because I want to see at what point do I hit this wall, because I'm sure it's coming. Like, every typical mobile game, there is going to be a point where it's like, you're just not strong enough for this boss or whatever. You know, wink, wink, maybe you should put some money in. But even in
maybe
terms,
you should spend $10.
But even in terms of, sorry, so if you're watching on the screen now, I mean, this is still early in Final Fantasy VII, where we've bombed whatever Sector 7 or whatever the hell it is. We're at the Hideaway. But now what typically happens is Barrett and them go like, hey, we've got another mission, and you go on another mission. But I'm seeing content here where Cloud is like talking to Biggs and Wedge and Jesse. There's just like these other story beats that they're included, and like, I don't know if it's necessary. It's just dragging out the whole experience. Like, I understand.
That pizza looks good though. Look at that. Look at that Napolitana.
Oh my gosh. So
look at
good.
That basil on
Biggs
there.
Biggs is just enjoying it.
Amazing.
But even this, so like, if you're an audio listener, it's Cloud talking to Biggs in the Hideaway. And then it's literally Cloud like talking to Wedge, it's Wedge, not Biggs, talking to Wedge, going like, oh, are you ready for the next mission? And Wedge is like, no, like, I'm a bit nervous. And then he's like, Cloud, can you come with me? And you go with him and you do a battle like you're seeing now. And I'm like, what? It's just like
where did the battle spawn from? They're just battling outside. He's like,
you're like,
fuck this pizza. I'm going to go.
I'm going to go outside. I'm like, but this is like a mobile formula thing where it's like, okay, we need to inject battles as well. I'm like, but why? Like, we could just skip this bit of the game and go. I don't know. It's weird design choices, and it's frustrating, because like, I love Final Fantasy, and I think I know a lot of people playing this who are going to probably bounce off, because it's just going to be frustrating. I know I'm going to get to a point where I'm like, I just want to play the damn game. Why couldn't I have just bought this mobile Final Fantasy, paid money for it, and just had an experience?
Yeah,
I don't know.
No, I get that. Yeah,
maybe I'm being a bit
harsh, for sure. But it's like, it's weird. It's like, I know Umar said, he's like, this was always billed as a gacha, and it was always billed as this sort of thing. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. No, it's still kind of crap.
It's aggressive,
because like, it's definitely preying on people who like this franchise, who, you know, are fond of Final Fantasy VII, just like you.
Yeah.
And then when they get there, they're like, oh, this is not at all what I thought it was going to be, you know.
No.
But I think the benefit of that is like, you are not starved of ways to play Final Fantasy VII in the modern age.
Yeah.
We have Final Fantasy VII Rebirth coming quite soon.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess this is just damn, this one sucks. Guess I have to wait a few months until the next one.
I was going to say, all that said, it's funny, because it's a mobile game, they have broken it down into chapters. So it is very cool to play on the go. Like, you do a story beat and it takes like 5 minutes, if that. So I don't know. It's this weird balance, and I'm going to keep playing it because, I mean, it's a mobile game. I haven't spent a cent in it. I'm not going to complain, but I just want to see, what does it look like in the long run? Because there's a lot of content here. Oh, I think I stopped recording there. My bad. there's a lot of content to dive into and enjoy, but I'm like, I just don't know how, I can't envision how they've broken up this whole game. Like just the whole Final Fantasy VII, for example. I'm like, there's a lot of story beats. How have they chaptered this out and sub-chaptered it out? Yeah,
is the whole story there, or is it going to be like released piecemeal?
I think it's going to be. I'm sure they've. Again, I've not played beyond a certain amount of hours, but I can't imagine that they've released the whole game. I could be wrong, but I think they've probably released up to a point, and then it'll be like, you know, run back, do grind some missions, and then new story content's coming next month or whatever. I think it will be like episodic. If that makes sense. I don't know if I could get to like to roll credits now, is what I'm getting at. It's a mobile game. I'm like, I'm sure they're going to stretch it out, keep people coming back. You know, like, oh, we've released, I don't know, the Golden Saucer chapter. Now we've got new weapons and like, they'll keep people coming back. So we'll see.
Imagine you get to the end and it's like such a big thing for, Rebirth that you've played, like Ever Crisis. It's like it's all what together, you know, like they're all kind of building towards this weird future of Final Fantasy VII.
Oh my god, imagine. Well, it is weird because this mobile game feels like a mishmash of the original and the remake. It's like this weird middle ground where it's almost like turn-based, but it's not, and visually it looks like a very polished version of the original, but it's not. It's just interesting. So I'll keep playing it. I mean, it costs me nothing. I'll see what the story is.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Gotcha, Katam, Patchum, Cloud.
Gotta gotcha more. Pokemon.
I like
go.
It. you have to keep playing until you get a 5-star chocobo.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm sure when
are
I get...
Are there chocobos in Final Fantasy VII?
Yeah. Every Final Fantasy since 3, I think, is that chocobos.
But can you ride them?
Yeah. In the base game, you could. Like, I'm sure Rebirth, there's a story beat which you go to a chocobo farm. So I'm pretty sure you will ride them in the near future.
I love that because that means we're going to get a new chocobo theme.
You will.
It's always good. Love that. Should we hop on over to game releases for the week?
We're back into busy territory again.
Slowly inching our way back there. Looking at games out from, what is today? 9th of September, all the way up until the 15th. So, up until the 15th.
There's actually quite a few things.
Yeah, quite a few. I'm just looking if there's one or two things that are quite interesting here. We've got Mythforce. For some reason that rings a bell. I'm not entirely sure why. Yeah. Isn't it like a Diablo-like thing? Mythforce.
Maybe.
Mythforce is... No, not at all. Inspired by beloved Saturday morning cartoons, Mythforce unites swords and sorcery with a gripping first-person combat game in a roguelike adventure.
Hilarious.
So I couldn't have been more wrong.
It's like the complete opposite of what you said.
Yeah, complete opposite. Basically. But that's coming out to console, Switch, and PC. Eternite coming to PlayStation, Xbox, and PC September 12th. Gunbrella, which looks really fun. It's a new indie game published by Devolver Digital.
Nice.
PC and Switch, September 13th. Super Bomberman R2. Okay. PC, nice. PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch, September 13th. Button Kaitos 1 and 2 HD Remaster.
Nice.
I don't know. I've got nothing. Coming to Switch, September 14th. Dune Spice World coming to PC September 14th. I think this is the 4X RTS one that is like coming out of early access, maybe? I'm not sure. Here's a name you probably haven't heard in a while. Inspector Gadget.
Yeah.
Mad Party Time. Coming to PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC
all
September
of the
14th.
I did not
Monster
know,
Hunter now.
I did not know this is launching this week. Goodbye, Final Fantasy 7.
It's iOS and time. Android, September 14th. This is made by Niantic, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, I God. Think. Am I? If, Monster Hunter now. I swear it's done by Niantic. Maybe it's not. Wow. Okay. I actually don't know the website's not... Is it just Capcom?
I don't know.
No, it's I'm right. It's Niantic and Capcom.
What?
Yeah.
Capcom are like, listen, we saw what you did with all those Pokemons. Those Pokemon.
Do it again for Monster Hunter.
Do it again for Monster Hunter. Yeah. I could see this game working and say, look, it's
I actually
interesting.
Could, yeah.
Because
I definitely could.
Monster Hunter is like an action RPG, I guess you could call it that.
Yeah.
But from a how the game works in terms of leveling and getting new gear and that loop, it's like it'll work on mobile perfectly. They can stretch a thing out forever.
Yeah,
and I'm sure they will.
So that's out on September 14th. The Crew Motorfest, which seems like, you know, this is the third one that Ubisoft has made, but with each one they keep creeping closer and closer to just making their own Forza Horizon, which, listen, I'm there for.
Yeah.
PlayStation, Xbox, and PC, September 14th. And then NASCAR Arcade Rush. PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC.
Nice.
September 15th.
Love.
Yo, the week after that is wild. Lies of P, Mortal Kombat 1.
Oh my God. Goodbye.
That's pretty much it. Sorry.
Starfield.
Yeah, goodbye.
Goodbye. Party Animals is also around the corner. That's pretty cool.
Boop. Party Animals.
That's like that multiplayer. It's, how would I even describe it?
Is that the one with the inflatable animals?
Yeah, basically.
This one. Yes, yeah. This looks really fun.
Yeah. Cool. That is games out this week. Shall we get to news? Collected the news. I do not know. We should probably start
Switch
with...
Switch 2.
The Switch 2 was apparently shown behind closed doors to people at Gamescom.
Yeah, so there were a lot of these reports coming out of Gamescom, people being like, I've heard that Nintendo was demoing the Nintendo Switch successor or the Switch 2 for all intents and purposes at Gamescom to very select press.
Yeah.
And then a lot of like press who were there, you know, from like big outlets were like, didn't hear about that like at all. Like very like, not sure where this has come from, but we didn't hear about that. Nintendo had a stall, but we had no idea. You know, even Digital Foundry was like, we didn't see that, we didn't, whatever.
Yeah.
But now Eurogamer and Video Games Chronicle have both said that they have spoken to people who did see it, or at least were there for the presentation.
Yeah.
So it was a tech demo that took place behind closed doors. Partners shown, so it was mainly partners. So this is more, I think, for third parties.
Yeah.
Were shown what the Switch is being designed to run. And they were shown tech demos for what the system was capable of. According to Eurogamer here, one Switch 2 demo featured a souped-up version of The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, designed to hit Switch 2's beefier target specs. They are clear to stress that this is just a tech demo. There's no suggestion that Nintendo is working on a re-release of this game at this time. Also important to note that just because they say there were tech demos doesn't necessarily mean the actual console's there.
Yeah,
they were running these demos. It's no. It seems that they had a PC that was configured to their target specs of what they think their next Switch will be capable of. The hardware is not confirmed or set in stone. So like these things are at a stage where everything's completely in flux. Like these are the sorts of dev machines that developers would get now so they can start preliminary work on the game and have a rough idea of what the Switch will target. And then as it gets closer to launch, that will hone in, and they will have a much better idea of you're going to have exactly this amount of RAM, exactly this, you know. So I wouldn't take the performance of what is being reported here as gospel to what we will
actually see
get in the end product. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's very important to stress that because like like early dev machines are not the console. You know, when the consoles actually started to be built, then you start brushing up against, you know, maybe things that actually increase performance, but more likely than not, things that limit it because of the form factor or limitations that, you know, weren't present because you weren't actually working with the actual hardware.
Yeah.
With that said, VGC also reported that there was a demo where the target hardware was running the Matrix Awakened Unreal Engine 5 demo.
Right.
Which only runs on current gen consoles, which is kind of fucking insane.
Yeah.
Apparently it was running with the aid of DLSS and all sorts of stuff, which could suggest that the next Switch will support DLSS, which is probably correct, given that it will probably remain on an NVIDIA chipset and now it will have support for that stuff. So
nice.
That will definitely allow them to at least you run games that are on current gen consoles on the Switch, because DLSS is definitely going to help to that degree.
Yeah.
Apparently development kits are now in the hands of key partners. There's no indication that this is going to launch any sooner than originally reported, and that would be, you know, the widespread rumors that it's end of next year that this console's coming out,
which I think would
make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
I think that makes tons of sense. And that's pretty much it. I think, will we get a Nintendo Switch 2 reveal before the end of the year? I think not. I think, if anything, and I don't even think that it will happen then because that's not very Nintendo-like, but like a tease at the Game Awards. But I don't think Nintendo really needs that. I think there will just be a day where there's going to be a fucking tweet dropped and like, hey, in the next few days, we're going to talk about the future of the Switch.
Yeah, like a direct or whatever. Boom.
Yeah. And that's going to, I wouldn't be shocked if it's like early next year, you know.
Do we have any doubts that the Switch 2, I mean, we're calling it the Switch 2, that it's going to be the same hybrid mobile/home console?
Apparently it is. Yeah. Okay. A lot of rumors, again, from people who were privy to these tech demos or at least have gotten details from Nintendo with dev kits, have said it is a hybrid console again.
I think it would be very silly of Nintendo to not have a hybrid system. Like, I can't see...
I think it would be very silly of Nintendo not to have backwards compatibility.
No. Yeah.
Hasn't been spoken about yet.
Like, 100%. But my thing is, like, I can't see a future where in 2, 3, 4 Nintendo consoles time that they go, oh, we're done with handheld. We're going straight back to home console only. Like, maybe I'm wrong. I just think the Switch has been such a wild success that it has prompted, you know, indirectly or inadvertently, the likes of a Steam Deck, because it's shown that like, mobile gaming, there's definitely a market for that. I mean,
you're seeing that Lenovo Steam Deck thing that is basically like a PC Switch now. Like, it's definitely the form factor that people want.
Yeah.
Now. So,
yeah.
I just wonder what, because every Nintendo console has had something like pretty unique. Gimmicky-wise, and hardware-wise, like, what does the Switch 2 to differentiate itself from that? Or are we in an era now where that is not the Nintendo anymore, you know, because, like, Iwata was kind of, like, behind that push for a very long time. Like, the Wii had motion controls, and the Wii U had, you know, the tablet thingy, and now the Switch was a hybrid console, and this, you know, the Switch was kind of, the last thing he put into motion.
Yes.
So I wonder now if the hierarchy at Nintendo are like, well, the Switch sold so stupidly well, we don't really want to take a risk on something. Let's just make it more powerful and move on. Yeah.
Nintendo come out, say, it's a 3-in-1. It's a home console, handheld, and VR goggles. You can strap the Switch 2 to your head.
It's also an Alexa-powered kettle.
For one very specific fan of ours.
we heard the needs of one man in the UK.
We got you covered.
Who needed his tea while playing Zelda.
My God. All that said, I'm very excited to see a Switch 2. Like, I've absolutely loved my Switch.
Absolutely.
Other pieces of news. Starfield, which we were talking about earlier, has hit 6 million players and has become the biggest Bethesda game launch ever. And this little sub caption here, stellar. Never change, you're a gamer. You're just the best.
Just chef's kiss. I love it. Too good.
It's too good. But yeah, good on... I mean, it's I would be shocked if this game didn't have millions of players, like, because Bethesda's side, it is also on Game Pass, which will obviously give it a healthy boost of active players. But yeah, it's quite crazy. Like, I wonder what this game will cap out at. So what is, where does it sort of peak? Like, are we going to hit 10, 15 million players or beyond? And like, how long will it take to get there? But like, what blew my mind, what blew my mind is that there was an early access period where you could pay X amount to play the game a week early, basically. $100. And there were a lot of people playing that early access, which means a lot of people
over
paid.
Over 300,000 people just on Steam playing.
Which is, I mean, that's...
No, it's nuts. It's crazy. It was the fifth best concurrent launch on Steam this year, and it was only people who had paid the essentially almost double the price of $100
just for those few days of early access. So people,
it's
like,
crazy. It's
game pass aside, people are out here buying this game as well. So.
This is the thing that Eurogamer notes. They say, like, you know, this 6 million suggests that a Bethesda game has never hit 6 million players in such a quick time frame. And players is such a weird way to measure that, because now Xbox has to measure it in terms of players, because it can't say sales.
Yeah.
Because that would omit Game Pass.
They've
completely shifted the metric to players. But, like, as Eurogamer notes, on the one hand, it's done so with the help of Xbox Game Pass, which everyone will be quick to point at.
Mm.
But on the other, it's done so without anyone on PlayStation.
Mm.
So, oh, like, Skyrim, Fallout 4 launched on PlayStation, Xbox, and PC.
Mm.
So for it to be one platform less and still reach this time frame shows that A, Game Pass is working, and B, keeping it exclusive did not impact this game, like, at all, in the way that people thought it would, or the way that people maybe hoped it would. It's cool. People love Bethesda games, and they love... It also just shows that, like, who is looking at reviews? I don't know who you know, like the reviews were good, but there were a lot of, like, oh, you should be careful. There's, and, like, reviews are important to critique games, no doubt. But, like, would they have had any impact on these launch figures? I don't think so.
I also don't think so.
Phil Spence also noted that Starfield had exceeded 1 million concurrent players across all platforms, including Steam. Around 250,000 players have been playing Starfield on Steam at its daily concurrent user peak, a figure which hasn't changed much since it launched via early access last week. Wild. I think Starfield's going to be a big game for 100%. Microsoft.
Yeah, it's going to...
And I think the sort of sentiment you see on social media is not indicative of the wider sentiment of this game. Yeah.
So I completely bounced away from Nintendo, and I only just realized that there was more Nintendo news. It's my bad. But Nintendo, well, Zelda producer says there are no plans for a Tears of the Kingdom DLC, which is fun.
I played
the Breath of the Wild DLC with great excitement, and then ended with great meh.
It was bad.
It was real bad. Like, not your forte.
I wouldn't say bad. It was just highly disappointing.
It was very disappointing. It was, like,
given what it was promising.
It was like, more stories on the champions and this. And then it's like, it wasn't really that at all. It was hardly. It's more like, here's a snippet of story. Go do some shrines or something and have another snippet of story. That's it. Tears of the Kingdom. I'm still Archer chipping away. Great time.
I'm having a good time with it. I'm also chipping away when I can, because I'm trying not to take a long break from it again and forget what the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah.
But, man, I'm just really having a good time. I'm not building as much stuff. I don't think I've vibed with that system as much as I thought I would. But I'm just having a great time again, just exploring and, like, oh, I'm going in this direction. I'm going in that direction. Oh, there's a dragon flying in the air. I know that's going to be something. I just don't want to... I've come across so many of these, like, fucking Hydra dragons around the world that absolutely annihilate me. And I'm just like, okay, well, I'll figure that out
later.
I found now the little Temple of Time, which maps out all the glyphs that have the tears. So I'm busy doing that and piecing together the backstory of what's going on.
Nice.
I'm now currently, the last thing I played was, remember in the one region there's that like maze, like a stone maze.
Oh yeah.
With like a shrine in the middle. So I did that.
Mm.
But there's now a maze, like a mirrored one in a sky temple thing above me, and I have no clue how to get up there. And I'm trying to figure out how I get up there. Because I cannot, for the life of me, understand how to get up
there. Those sky islands are hilarious because it is a thing of like, huh, how do I get up there?
Yeah, I'm just... And there's a side quiz because I pressed a button in the maze and it's like a door is opened in a maze above you. And I'm like, oh, crap. Like,
yeah.
How do I... I also fought for the first time one of those little gloom things with the lots of little hands. Oh,
the hands. Terrifying.
Yes. And then the boss comes afterwards and boy, did he wreck my shit. Wow.
The first time those hands appeared, it was genuinely very terrifying. It's like,
terrifying because they just rush you and they grab you constantly.
The sky gets dark and then the music changes. I was like, what is going on? I was like, oh, okay, there's a lot of hands coming over for a handshake.
have you found that massive tunnel that goes from that little lookout city all the way underneath Hyrule Castle?
I think I have. It does ring a bell.
Because I went there for like a side quest where I found this like statue who can swap out health and stamina.
That was actually in the base game.
And I just carried on.
Mm.
Yeah, it was in the base game, yeah.
Yeah.
And I carried on down this path, and eventually I just emerged in Hyrule Castle. And I was like, what the...
That's amazing.
Where... This has just been here the whole time. Like,
yeah.
It's too good. Cool. And I got some cool armor from there. So, yeah, it was good.
Nice.
Game's good.
Yeah, I love it. I'm still chipping away and having a great time. Let's bounce to Final Fantasy quickly. Final Fantasy 16 is coming to PC after all, and there's new story DLC on the way. This announcement made me laugh because this was from Gamescom as well, right? Or not Gamescom, it was... Where was it announced? Doesn't matter.
I don't know if it was just like the special...
It was PAX West, sorry, that's it, not Gamescom. PAX West, I think they
PAX
had a...
West, okay.
A panel, and then... I mean, we knew there was PlayStation exclusivity for a while, I think. But it was just straight up... Okay, the game is coming to PC. Also, there's DLC coming.
Yeah.
And
I feel like they've always said it's coming to PC, but that they just haven't started working on it. Yeah.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't they at one stage say there would be no story DLC, or did I? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I could have sworn
I'm not
it's
sure
like
if they
no,
said they wouldn't be.
The story's done, like that, and then it's like no, there's DLC.
I wouldn't be shocked by that. And then now they've seen that maybe the game sold, well, according to Square Enix, it sold worse than they expected. But maybe you know that. I'm happy that this paid story DLC. I do wonder what sort of breadth of scope this will have. Like, will it be like a Final Fantasy 15 episode of Joshua or episode Joe?
Or I also don't know.
If like, they go that route, what two characters would you want? Because they said it's two, so.
I also did wonder if it's not, because the game obviously has a lot of history behind it, like all the events leading before the main story, there are hundreds of years.
Yeah,
I do wonder, do they dive into, I don't know, the past and then... There'll be some protagonist who does some stuff and then there's a what's the word I'm looking for? There's like a, I just can't think of the word, like when they get like not a fortune, a, it's like you,
a premonition,
like a premonition, or they get a something of like, oh, there will be two fire icons and then it'll roll credits, go, oh, okay, you know what I mean, like I wonder if they do one of those, they go back into the past, and then
you know that's got me thinking. Like, it's a really good idea. You could have like an episode where you are playing as Clive's father.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
you read so many like codex entries about like his fights against I can't remember who it was, but like to reclaim like their homestead that they're at the beginning of the game.
Yes.
And stuff like that. And losing their mother crystal in the process and stuff like that. So that could be a big one.
The word I was looking for was prophecy. I was like, I just could not think
prophecy
of the word prophecy.
But that one would work super well because it could be maybe his father sees a premonition of like two fire icons and that's why he like fosters both of his sons in a very
lot of material nice they way. Could play with.
I 100% want an episode Sidolphus.
Oh yes, please. I'm there.
That has to be one of them. That there is no fucking way you give a character like Sid and then not explore him more.
Yeah.
Because like, he also has a history. He's done so much.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they could do a lot of stuff with him.
The establishment of the rebels, the I also just want to hear more of his voice.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That guy. It's too good.
Yeah, I'm keen. I'm definitely keen.
Last two pieces of news. So E3 continues to fall apart is the headline of this article.
The Verge being very dramatic, but also quite accurate.
But the long and the short of it is that while the ESA was supposed to work with Readpop for E3 this year, things started to fall apart when companies like Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo dropped out of the show. Now GamesIndustry.biz reports that the ESA and Readpop have made the mutual decision to exit their multi-year deal. RIP.
Yeah, so Readpop, who were probably the best company to kind of revive E3, given all of the work they do with PAX, you know, a expo that every single year people say is incredible and fun and the right amount of press and public focused, you know. When they were announced to be working with the ESA on E3, there was actually some glimmer of like hope, like, okay, maybe the ESA has actually given the reins to people who can actually sort this shit out. But that's no longer the case. Readpop have exited. No idea who the ESA is going to get to replace them. But the ESA basically confirmed for real that there is no E3 2024 expo happening at the Los Angeles Convention Center. So they stopped short of saying an expo at all. They just said it won't happen at the LACC for sure next year because, hey, they never booked it. So now they've lost their booking.
Yeah.
They did say that, the Los Angeles City and Tourism Commission doesn't expect E3 to come back in 2025 either, but the ESA hasn't canceled that one just yet.
Yeah.
So the ESA says they're planning a complete reinvention of E3 for 2025. So that tells me they've definitely cancelled 2024 already.
Yeah.
Which means I wonder where Nintendo shows off its fancy Switch 2.
Jeff Keighley salivating at this exclusive opportunity.
Essentially. Well, Nintendo took all of their money from, you know, not going to E3 this year and did a thing in Seattle this past week at PAX. They did like, I think it was called Nintendo Live, and it was like an expo separate to PAX, but happening at the same time. And they just poured all of the money, the budget they had there. And apparently it was phenomenal. People got to play like Super Mario Wonder. It was really well organized. Maybe they just do one of their own expo again, you know?
Yeah. Who knows? And then last piece of news, Diablo 4 DLC expansions will be... Well, Diablo 4 will get a new expansion every year. Blizzard confirms that it's going after Destiny 2's release model.
Yeah, a bit of a wild one.
I mean,
Diablo in the past has always been like one big expansion and that's it. This almost sounds like seasons, which they already have. They're already doing content seasons anyway. Destiny did do its annual expansions to varying degrees of success.
Yeah.
Rod Ferguson confirmed this in an interview that, they're going to do annual expansions. And continue going for this like very live service feel to Diablo. So I will say that after finishing Diablo 4's campaign, I feel good with that game. I've not checked in on the new seasons because I feel no compulsion to just grind away at more stuff for the purpose of seasons. But if an expansion comes through with new areas and new story content, then I'll play that. Sure.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I did with Destiny. I played between expansions and didn't really play much.
Between.
Yeah,
I still need to get to Diablo 4. One day.
Good game. I think it's a good game. Yeah. It's fun.
Cool. Well, on that note, that is news
on that for this week.
It's news for this week, which means we are going to questions. We have a whole lot.
If you want to send us questions, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on social media at Checkpoint Chat, as many have this week. You can DM us, you can tweet us, you can do whatever.
All of things.
You can pigeon mail us. Good luck. especially if you're sending it to Matthew.
Oh my God. Yeah. cool. So,
you can send an email to Matthew's kettle.
Alexa, boil me my kettle and read my email. So we have a question from Abe_Wilson, who slid into our DMs and wrote, having recently finished both Alan Wake and Control for the first time and Alan Wake 2 just around the corner, do you guys expect Remedy to continue building on the shared universe while keeping the games completely separate, or do you think at some point the respective protagonists will appear in each other's games? Why do I feel weird? I think, didn't we kind of touched on this, but was that also a fever dream? I'm just imagining the conversations we've had.
I think we probably did when we were speaking about Alan Wake's trailer from Gamescom. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think both of us haven't played the DLC for Control.
Yeah.
Which I feel very compelled to do before Alan Wake arrives.
Yeah.
The same with Alan Wake and its DLC. I feel I need to brush up on that. But as far as I understand it, there's already been a lot of like cross-pollination between Control and Alan Wake.
Yes.
I don't know if Alan Wake himself directly appears in the Control DLC, but he's,
I don't think,
if I'm not mistaken, like very strongly referenced.
Yes.
And there's this idea that even the events of Control are just another story of Alan Wake that he's written in an attempt to escape the dark place. And like Jesse is just another like character that he's thrust into this weird scenario. So that there's, you know, like other puzzle pieces like being put into place. So maybe the whole of Control and the whole of Alan Wake 2 all interconnect because it's Alan's latest attempt to try and escape where he's trapped. So
yeah.
I don't know if we'll get a Avengers team up style thing where Jesse and Alan are both fighting alongside each other.
Alan Control 3.
Yeah. Alan Control. Control Waked. I don't know if we'll do that. I wouldn't put it past them, to be entirely honest, though. I know Sam Lake loves these sort of interconnected stories, and at the very least, you know that he's only going to do them when they make sense. He's not going to do them for the shock value of, look, these two characters said hi to each other. Like,
if I don't get,
I feel like Remedy's been very reserved in that regard. So
whatever. Yeah. If I don't get a cameo from Max Payne at the end of Alan Wake 2, then Remedy,
listen, Sam Lake's got a character model in Alan Wake, and everyone thought it was Max Payne, but it's not.
Hilarious.
So.
Cool.
Technically, Alan Wake is in Control. The actor who plays Alan Wake plays Dr. Darcy, the scientist in Control.
Oh, is that the same actor?
Same actor, yeah.
Who knew? Cool. Then we have a whole lot of questions on Instagram. So I do not know how to pronounce this username. What in noise there? What? What noise? I'm going to go with that.
Wow. Did you? Okay.
It's okay. You tell me. It's spelled WITENOYZE.
Yeah, I'd say white noise.
Right.
That's
noise.
A dope username. I love that.
Right noise. You asked Starfield, played it, ? Yes. Just hit rewind
was that
on
the
episode.
Question?
That's the question.
Yeah, just hit rewind
just
on the episode.
Rewind,
we spent half an hour talking about
go,
it. Yeah.
Go back to like the 15-minute mark and enjoy. then we have a question from @JaredBrapra. It's Starfield related, but it's not about Starfield. He says, hey guys, seeing the Starfield hype, what's the most hyped game you've played that disappointed most?
that disappointed.
Yeah.
The most hyped game
that disappointed. I think I've had a similar answer for similar questions in the past, where it's not necessarily that the game was bad by any means, but I remember being very excited for the original Dishonored.
I played it
and not at all that the game was bad. It just didn't click for me. And I was just like, man, I can't believe I paid money for this. Like, I could have just grabbed it on a sale, but I got it on launch day. I was like, ooh, like, look at this interesting new game, this interesting setting. And I played it. I was like, eh, wasn't quite what I expected it to be. But that's on me. That's not on the game itself.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it would classify as like one of my most hyped games, but I was definitely very excited for it. And I've tried multiple times to get into it and finish it, and I end up dropping it every time. And that's Doom Eternal. After loving that first game, like, absolutely, I've played Doom 2016 multiple times. I just love that game. And I just think they tried to overcomplicate the sequel too much. I never got comfortable with the sort of rock, paper, scissors mechanics of like, you need to do this to like weaken this enemy, then do that, then do that, or you need this type of weapon. I just want to kill fucking demons. Yeah. That's all I want to do. Like, yeah. So I've tried to play it on the game's terms, but it's a game that I probably won't finish ever. And while I acknowledge that they're trying something ambitious, they couldn't just do the exact same thing. It just never stuck for me. And that's a bummer because I really, really like that first reboot.
It was a good reboot. Yeah, I'm
trying to think of others. Skyrim is definitely up there because I was fucking hyped for that because of the way people were talking about that, and that and absolutely
then like, dragons tore cried me down. At the end. And
oh God, I couldn't. I just couldn't.
I actually have an answer for this. Final Fantasy 13. That's weird because we spoke about it on Discord this week. I can't remember how we got into that, but at the time, I've got a weird history with PlayStation 2. I never owned a PlayStation 2, so I never played Final Fantasy 10, never played Final Fantasy 10 2 or 12. I mean, I since have, but this back then I hadn't. And I loved Final Fantasy. I'd played 1 through 9, and on PlayStation 3 they were launching Final Fantasy 13. So I think I just set the bar very high in my own head because I was like, wow, not only is it like, I miss PlayStation 2. So it's like a next gen Final Fantasy. Like, I can't even fathom what this game's going to be like. It's just going to blow my mind. And then again, got it on release day, and Final Fantasy 13 was not at all what I thought it would be. I remember playing it and being very, very disappointed of like visuals aside, visually it was a masterpiece. Like, I think
it looked great at the time.
It definitely put that PS3 through its paces. But in terms of like, again, remember I'm coming off a like Final Fantasy 7, 8 or 9 where it's like turn-based, whatever. Final Fantasy 13's battle system was literally like, you choose a role for each character and it's an auto-battler, basically. Like, there's death to it later in the game, but for all intents and purposes, you enter a fight and you just watch it unfold and you switch stance and you watch it unfold. I was like very disappointed by that. Also, the thing of Final Fantasy games have always been the thing of, it's not really open world. Like, they always do steer you down corridors or to certain places. But I think the fact that Final Fantasy 13 was literally like you walking down a corridor for the whole game, just about. I was like, But I've since come around in the game because, you know, I shelved it, came back to it knowing what to expect, and I actually really enjoyed it the second time. I got to the actual open world section, understood what they're trying to do with that battle system, understood the depth behind it, and I was like, it's actually not a bad game. Like, I think it upset a lot of fans, but that's definitely an example of, you know, that my expectations were like through the roof for that game, and I was very disappointed.
I feel like that game's always been the sort of like stepchild of the Final Fantasy series, and now we have 16 to take that place because everyone is mad about that game now instead.
Yeah.
I think similarly to that, I just remembered another one, but Red Dead Redemption 2. Another game where the first one I absolutely loved. It's probably one of the only Rockstar open worlds I actually enjoy because I think I get very bored with the stories in Grand Theft Auto. Yeah. But Red Dead Redemption, I just, yeah, it was fucking great. And I was all in on the sequel and maybe played about 10 hours and I was done with it. I was just like, this is not, like, I get what this game's doing. It's more simulation heavy. It wants you to really feel like the life of like Arthur Morgan and being a cowboy. It's also like purposefully very slow, not just in its pacing of its story, but also just like, you move slowly, you draw your gun slowly, everything feels like you're like walking through molasses. It's hot. I think it feels terrible. And
yeah,
I just couldn't get over that. It just felt like a terrible game to play and I haven't gone back to it since. So yeah, bummer. I was very, very disappointed by that. So yeah.
I hate to see it. Cool. Then we have one last, well, thank you for that question, Jared Brapra. We have one last question from good pal Miklos. Who asks, why is Matty like this?
I ask myself that every day.
Don't know. Nick. I just don't know.
I don't actually know what this is referring to, but it could be so many things.
So many things. No idea what is going on.
I mean, it
on.
Could be referring to your Alexa powered kettle for we find out.
How did you know? No one knew about that. It arrived last night. My goodness.
Miklos knew. He knows.
You just knew. Yeah. And that's it. That is questions for this week.
If you want to send us questions as well, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on all of our social platforms at Checkpoint Chat. And that's what episode is this?
257.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare.
233.
Definitely no, it's not that far down the line. My God. You're going to have to be a bit more sly than that.
Damn it.
This has been episode 233 of Checkpoint Chat. As always, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. We hope you are enjoying the Starfield if you are playing. If not, we hope you are enjoying whatever is keeping you company these evenings. And we will be back next week. Have a delightful week.
Goodbye.